The focus keeps coming back to jobs.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open. A look at the economy this morning as markets open and trading gets underway. How about it? Where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P off about 0.5%. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow off 58 points at 10,382. European markets are off an average of about 1% right now. And in Asia, the Nikkei and Hang Seng both fell today in trading. General Mills today said second quarter profits rose by half. Its cereals and snacks business fueling some added business there. Stocks trading higher now by about 1%. And shipping giant FedEx says its second quarter results not so good. Down 30% over last year. Its shares are lower right now, about 4.5%. The Labor Department says the number of workers filing for jobless benefits went up unexpectedly by 7,000 last week. The number of those continuing to collect also rose slightly. It's a reminder the labor market may need some more time for a comeback. Let's bring in Gary Schilling. He heads up the economic consulting firm that bears his name in Springfield, New Jersey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
So I want to focus on the labor market right now. The House last night passed a jobs bill that would pump all this money, $150 billion plus, into projects designed to create jobs through infrastructure improvement. You think that's going to have the effect that they desire?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, the previous bill, the $787 billion bill passed last spring, didn't do very much. People saved all the tax cuts. The money really didn't get out to the infrastructures. It sort of got absorbed by state and local governments without any decided effects on their job woes. So if they go after jobs directly, that may be better than in the past, but the consumer's in a funk. Consumer's trying to save, not spend. So they're fighting an uphill battle.
Is it possible, Gary, that there's just not much the government can do to reduce unemployment, that maybe this is just a private sector thing?
Oh, yeah, it is. And I mean, what they're trying to do is counteract the private sector, but they're really at war with each other. Consumers want to save. Businesses want to cut costs. Government wants to do the opposite. They want them to create jobs, not cut jobs in the business sectors, and they want consumers to spend and not save. Those are two paradoxes, a paradox of thrift and the paradox of job decreation, if you will. But it is a fight. Now, you know, to a certain extent, the government is offsetting what's going on in the private sector, but it isn't a case where everybody's pulling on the same oar.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Ben Bernanke. His term as Fed chairman expires at the end of January. President Obama's nominated him for a second term, and that's now before the Senate Banking Committee at this hour. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is with us live from New York for the latest. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So is Mr. Bernanke expected to get the votes he needs from this committee?
He is, but it could be closer than he'd like. I thought maybe we'd have a vote by now, but I'm looking at Richard Shelby, the ranking member, and he is still talking, so they haven't had the vote yet. For the most part, those who support Bernanke say he saved us from falling into a depression. Those who oppose him say, well, the crisis happened on his watch. Why should we reappoint this guy? But assuming that he does get the support from the committee this morning, it is most certainly not going to be an easy ride through the Senate when the full Senate takes him up after the new year.
But hasn't he been trying to change the way in which he's been viewed?
Yeah, well, remember, he went on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
He went on the PBS NewsHour. He's really been out there trying to show people he's not a Wall Street guy. He's a Main Street guy. He understands Main Street. I just spoke with the former Fed economist Morris Davis, who's at the University of Wisconsin, and he says at this point he'd support Bernanke, but not enthusiastically.
Given that they don't present a list of candidates, and given the knowledge that we could do much worse, I would argue that we should reappoint Bernanke. But people should understand that this has become a highly politicized Federal Reserve at the expense of the U.S. economy.
And a highly politicized Fed, Steve, that Davis says it's unlikely any Fed chairman would be able to ratchet down that politicization at this point in time.
Hey, Gary Schilling in New Jersey, there's been a lot of criticism of the Fed chairman. Very quickly, has it been fair, do you think?
To a certain extent, but mainly because what led up to the crisis, not the Fed's reaction to it, the lack of supervision, the lack of regulation, when lending in the housing, other areas were going wild, that's when the Fed should have been stepping in.
All right, Dr. Gary Schilling joining us from Springfield, New Jersey. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson with us right across the river from New York City. Thanks to you as well.
You're welcome, Steve.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, December 17th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Bank of America's new CEO is being tapped from within the company ranks. Brian Moynihan will replace Ken Lewis at the first of the year. Up to now, Moynihan's headed up B of A's global wealth management business. Since the banking crisis, many financial companies have really cut their payrolls, and many of those former employees are still hurting and can't find work. Now, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, some are prepared to take whatever they can get.
Nearly 90,000 people have lost jobs in banking and finance since 2008, 10% of the total workforce. Many of them expected to be working again by now at comparable salaries. But reality has sunk in.
Listen, a lot of these people have been on the sidelines for quite some time, and they realize that they can't be too picky about compensation.
Skitty Von Stotti runs the online employment service OneWire. In a recent survey, the firm found that 80% of laid-off financial workers have been unemployed longer than they expected. Nearly 60% would now consider a lower-paying position. But they may not even have to, Von Stotti says.
It's getting to the point now where companies are beginning to compete again for talent.
This is especially true for new MBAs who've been in school during the worst of the crisis. Von Stotti says the top financial firms are offering $100,000 in base pay plus a $40,000 signing bonus. He says that's back to pre-recession levels. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Reports suggest it's even more common than usual this year for retailers to push their own store credit cards on consumers to get them to spend. The offers usually include big discounts on initial purchases. But while store cards may be a boon for those retailers, they're not necessarily good for customers, as Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Stores want to nab customers who'll shop there again, now more than ever. Paco Underhill is CEO of EnviroCell.
And the store credit card is one distinct way of identifying who that customer is and providing them the incentives to come back.
But some people sign up simply because of the 10 to 20% discount they get off their first purchase. That's particularly attractive to a lot of shoppers this year. Leslie McFadden is with Bankrate.com. She says then there's the added incentive of paying the card off at 0% interest for a set period of time.
And what's tricky about it is if you don't pay off the balance within that promotional period, then you're probably going to be facing a very high interest rate, around 20%.
Or more at many stores, from Bloomingdale's to Gap, so it's easy to obliterate any initial savings. Also, she says, store cards tend to have low credit limits, so before you know it, you've maxed out. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Days of the UN Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen. Marketplace is there. Today, an announcement from the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton that might give negotiations a boost. From the Danish capital, here's Stephen Beard.
Secretary Clinton addressed one of the thorniest issues facing the summit, the question of long-term financial aid to help poor countries cope with climate change. She said the U.S. is ready to play its part.
The United States is prepared to work with other countries toward a goal of jointly mobilizing $100 billion a year by 2020 to address the climate change needs of developing countries.
Mrs. Clinton did not specify how much of that $100 billion would come from the U.S., nor how much U.S. taxpayers would be providing. She said the money would come from a variety of public and private sources, and she added a caveat, a deal breaker. She said if there's no agreement on transparency, on monitoring and enforcing climate agreements, then there will be no money. In Copenhagen, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And continuing on the theme of climate change in Copenhagen, we're looking at how the issue is affecting nations and corporations around the world. Take General Electric's Big Balancing Act, Make a Profit and Act Environmentally Responsible. Ann Condon is Director and Counsel for Environmental Health and Safety Programs for GE. She joins us from Copenhagen. Hi, Ann.
Good morning.
You know, a lot of companies are now seeing that being profitable and fighting climate change are not mutually exclusive. I mean, how can addressing environmental issues actually benefit a company's bottom line?
Well, I think at GE we have focused on increasing revenue from products that are more energy efficient or cleaner than other products. And the revenues from those have increased faster than in other segments.
Earlier this year, GE became one of the many companies to complain about the policies of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in opposition to climate change legislation. What would you guys like to see from the chamber and from other businesses here in the United States?
Well, I think what we've been talking about, and I am here with GE, obviously, but I also chair the Environment Committee for the United States Council for International Business, which is the U.S. delegate to the International Chamber of Commerce. And the message that we've been giving through that forum, which obviously represents many businesses, is that we need a clear direction from policymakers, and we need to do that in a way that reflects obligations on the part of all the major emitting parties, or otherwise we end up with a very unfair arrangement, which will then lead to potentially trade sanctions, which we think is a very bad idea.
So how do you want to see this end? I mean, what do you want to see come out of Copenhagen?
Well, I think what we'd like to see come out of Copenhagen is a clear direction that the governments of this world are committed to continuing to tackle the climate change challenge and to put in place in their national legislation the kind of policies and measures that are, for example, under discussion in the U.S. Senate right now, have been adopted by the EU in their climate and energy package and are being talked about in jurisdictions around the world.
Well, Ann Condon, Director and Counsel of Environmental Health and Safety Programs over at GE, we thank you for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
Be sure to check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today for more coverage on the climate change talks going on in Copenhagen. Finally, it's America's longest-running TV show. 20 years ago today, we really started to get to know The Simpsons. What began as an animated sketch on The Tracey Ullman Show started in earnest on Fox on December 17th, 1989. 449 episodes, 25 Emmys, and a Peabody later, the family continues its dysfunction in Springfield. And we still don't know what state that's in. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles, California. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.